This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
They seemed to be successful in the first half on first down, especially. What did you guys do to kind of tighten that up after the half?
Yeah, I'm talking about their offense. Yeah, and I thought Jones circled us, you know, on a couple of runs that were some big ones. And I've seen that movie before where he can use his legs and get outside, and he certainly did. Sometimes you see that on a pass where he's got enough speed to lose ground to get outside and circle. These happen to be in the run game to go. But, you know, I thought that was, you know, what the legs and him getting outside, I thought was a big part of the explosive plays in that first half.
Yeah, they didn't really stop anything in the second half. They didn't stop much in the first half. They didn't stop much in the second half. The Giants had the ball three times in the second half, ran 32 plays, had well over 200 yards, and they scored on all three drives. Now, there was a fourth down conversion that should not have been. We will get to that here in a moment. But we continue with the game take. Denton will give us his big takeaways, and then it will be your turn in about 20 minutes. Just went through the list of things that I liked. Look, offensively, this team is elite. The quarterback is elite. Terry was outstanding. Love Rodriguez and the way he played. Eckler, Noah Brown, De'Ami Brown's 3rd-and-18 check down that he turned into a 24-yard run. Part Giants, definitely, in tackling, but he threw out a vicious stiff arm that kept that first tackler at bay. Defensively, a couple of players stood out. Fowler Jr., Chin, Armstrong in particular for me. The special teams are really good. Let me just check real quickly because they were very high in DVOA special teams before. Let's see if they've updated. Washington currently the 7th best overall special teams unit in the NFL. There is a relentless high energy nature to their coverage units you love to see. And you know, and then you get just this kicker. I mean, he had one that, you know, he kind of chunked against Baltimore. And then what was the other one he missed? Why am I forgetting? Did he miss one last week? He missed one last week, right? Against Chicago? Yeah. Pretty sure. Yeah, Baltimore, here it is. The two misses are both 50-plus yarders against Baltimore and against Chicago. He is having himself quite the season, kicking field goals in Washington, 25 of 27, and he's 22 of 22, perfection on PATs. All right, what I didn't like. So the defense plays so hard. They tackle so much better than they did earlier in the season. I think that they are really coached up from this standpoint. You know, if we're going to have some bad results, we're going to have them at full speed. This is a hustle team. I know that sounds very youth sports-ish, but this team flies around. They play with urgency. They play with a high motor. They play as physically as they can. But there's also no doubt that the flaw this year through 9 games has been their ability or inability to stop the run consistently against teams that have made an effort to run the football. I think they're pressuring the quarterback, you know, consistently now, and they're better. They appear to be better schemed. I think it's really hard sometimes to figure out who's coming and who isn't. But let's face it, in the first half, Daniel Jones was 4 for 6 for 0 yards passing, even though he did throw for a touchdown. The bottom line is, if they never threw a pass in the first half, the score would have been much closer than 21-7 because Washington could not stop the run. The Giants ran 21 times out of 28 snaps in the first half. 142 yards, that's 6.8 yards. And yeah, the quarterback's involved in the run game, just like Jalen Hurts will be on two games coming up this season that will be rather important. What was really interesting, because I went back and watched just the first half early this morning defensively, I mean, there were multiple times where there were eight guys in the box. There's a play on Daniel Jones's first big read option keeper where he got outside the edge and ran for 20-something yards. Washington had nine in the box, you know, versus kind of 31 personnel. They had three tight ends, one back, overloaded one side, put one of the tight ends in motion. And one of the tight ends just completely sealed the edge. You had the benefit, as I discussed offensively with Washington and Jaden Daniels, you had the benefit of a legit dual threat zone read option quarterback. And that's the style of play that was working for them. Tyrone Tracy's also outstanding. He's got quick feet. He's quick in traffic. He's got great vision. Singletary the same way. But look, they've been run on, you know, all season long, you know, against teams that, like, even in the game that they won 42-14, Connor ran the ball. They didn't run him enough, to be honest with you. And sometimes it is because they're facing good backs. I think Tracy's a good back. I think he is. And they're not able, you know, they miss a bunch. They're not able to square up a good runner with good vision. It looks like there are gap misses and contains at times. The Giants ran it at will. And the only reason that the score wasn't, you know, deadlocked or maybe Washington up by, you know, a score was because of the fumble on the Giants' second drive and the fact that the Giants completely, you know, were incompetent from a game situation standpoint at the end of the half. But, and then what happens against a team like the Giants, you know, with a dual threat quarterback, and so now their running game's even more effective against you. You give up 6.8 yards per carry in the first half. I mean, that drive that they scored the touchdown on that bled into the second quarter was a 9-minute drive. They only threw twice on that drive. And I don't, you know, they threw the touchdown pass on, or that was the Daniel Jones, excuse me. How about Daniel Jones, you know, running over people for a touchdown? That was a 16-play, 73. No, that was the touchdown pass to Manhurts, the tight end, in the back of the end zone on first and goal. That's a 16-play, 73-yard, 9-minute and 43-second drive. You know what 9 minutes and 43 seconds on the field defensively means more than anything else? It means number 5's not on the field. And that's going to be the formula to beating Washington. We used to say that about teams we would face. The formula is to run the football, possess the football against the weakness of the football team, which is the inability to be consistent against the run, to stay two-dimensional. You know, against Daniel Jones, if you make him one-dimensional, it's over. They were two-dimensional throughout. Even late in the game, you know, I saw somebody tweeted me and said, please don't go nuts over the second half yardage for the Giants. It's all garbage yards. You're out of your mind. You think Washington was in prevent? No. The last drive when they're up 27-16 and the Giants take over with 3:46 to go, that drive a little bit more soft, but the first two drives weren't. They went 15 plays, 66 yards, 8:37 off the clock in their first offensive drive, and their second one was 13 plays, 80 yards. Look, they got aided by a terrible spot on one of those drives. We'll get to that in a moment. But, you know, the bottom line is, and I said this in the open, but if you're going to give up, you know, that many yards rushing, and, you know, with a better quarterback, you're now going to be really susceptible to play action, to bootleg. You know, Jones threw for 174 yards in the second half. The Giants were 3-for-3, 17 points on three drives. They were 6-for-11 on third down in the game. They were 2-for-2 on fourth down, even though one of those was clearly not a first down. They just were never one-dimensional until maybe, you know, that final drive. But let's be real here with one another. The Giants were one third down stop on defense in two different occasions in the first half. In the second half, excuse me. From having the ball down one score. Down either 24-16 or 27-22. I would not have felt good about that. And I don't think much about the Giants. But I would not have felt good about that. The effort overall by the defense was, it was a C-minus, D-plus performance. The turnover was big, more on that coming up. And, you know, they had a fourth down stop that should have been challenged, and it would have been, you know, overturned the call on the field to throw to Neighbors in the spot. But Washington's productivity on offense from a drive standpoint was pretty much matched by the Giants. You know, the Giants in the second half went 3 for 3 on scores, and for the game were 4 for 6. Also on the list of things I didn't like. So that 4th and 2 that the Giants went for, first drive, second half, you know, down 21-7, that's a terrible spot. And the Giants did a nice job of getting up and running play quickly, but got to be better. You know, Dave Gardy, whoever it is up in the box, you gotta sniff that one out, because it didn't look like a first down in real time. And then, you know, you gotta wait for the replay. They don't have their own replay machines. I think we've explained the process before. You gotta wait for the clean feed replays in the booth, and I guess they didn't get one. You know, maybe that'll be something that Quinn's asked about today. Was he asked about in the post game, Denton, or not? Why they didn't challenge the 4th and 2 to
Neighbors?
I don't
believe so. I think he'll probably be asked about that today.
Yeah. But that kept that Giant drive alive. By the way, the Giants got completely hosed on the 4th and 1 touchdown pass, which Slayton was called for offensive pass interference. That was truly ticky-tack. But they wouldn't have been in that position had Washington challenged. They would have won that challenge. I don't think there's any doubt. All right. Other observations from the game. I want to start with the fumble on the Giants' second drive of the game. That play, I was surprised when they came back from commercial and Washington had the ball at the Giant 31. So I've gone back and looked at that play multiple times. Okay? There is no clear recovery when they blew that play dead. In fact, the closest player to the football when they blew it dead was a Giant, Tyrone Tracy. He was the closest. Wagner ended up recovering it. And yeah, it was a clear recovery at the end of the play, but the play had been whistled dead already. And you had Giant players stopping. Am I right, Denton? Like, if they whistle the play dead before the clear recovery, then it should have been Giant ball from where he fumbled, which, by the way, was in Washington territory.
I think you're wrong on that. I think if the replay shows a clear recovery, no matter if the whistle was blown or not, then that's what they go with.
That doesn't even make sense, though. If the other if the whistle blows the play dead, that's a mistake, by the way. Referees are told, you got to let these plays play out. And if the play plays out, you know, I think Wagner probably ends up with a clear recovery, but the Giant players slowed down when the whistle blew. Tracy was the closest to the ball when the referee started blowing the whistle and waving the play dead. I thought once the play is dead, if there's no clear recovery, you might be right. You might be right. I'll tell you what, it was a nice break. It was, you know, nice hustle by Bobby Wagner. I'm certainly not going to knock him for that. He played it out. He played it out even with the whistle blowing, the play dead. And Tyrone Tracy didn't necessarily. So that was one of the things I wanted to comment on. I've already mentioned the Giants absolutely mishandled the clock. Well, they mishandled the end of the first half in coverage. 11 seconds to go, no timeouts. And you got Deonte Banks on Terry McLaurin basically in man coverage. I think he was expecting some safety help, but it wasn't there. That's terrible. You know, you just can't allow that. You got to play everything in front of us pre, you know, 5-yard line. Let him catch it. Clock will run out. If you want to throw it to the sideline, you're in field goal range already. We're just not giving up a touchdown. That was terrible. And then before the 2-minute warning, right after that Chris Rodriguez first down run for 1 yard, the Giants should have banged their first to 3 timeouts. I think most people now know, except for a lot of coaches, you use your timeouts when you're behind on defense before the 2-minute warning. And the only time you don't use it before the 2-minute warning is you don't want to use it with about 2:07 or less on the game clock, because then you're giving free license to the offense to throw the football. Washington threw the big play, the big completion to Zacchaeus there. I think it was called, but if it wasn't called and they checked to that based on where the clock was and knowing that there was no downside to throwing the football there, they're brilliant. What else did I have? There's a run by McNichols. He runs hard. He was the only one that didn't have success running the football yesterday. And his legs are still churning, and he actually breaks a tackle. And the whistle, I think they're blowing the whistle on forward progress sometimes a little bit too quickly. I also hate sometimes when it looks like forward progress should be blown dead, and then you get the offensive line pushing a running back from like the 8-yard line into the end zone. I mean, but McNichols had one where he was clearly still churning, and they blew a whistle, and he actually broke a tackle. What else do I have here? Just going back to what the text that I got from a coach friend of mine. You know, the O-line had a good day. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't. I think the O-line has had a lot of really good days. I think the Giants had a ton of respect for Washington's quarterback in pass rush pressure. This is a team that was top 10 in pressure rate coming in, whether it was 4-man or 5-man. Whether they sent somebody else, they had enormous respect for what he could do if you didn't contain rush. That's what I would say. I'll go back and look at the All-22. Those of you that have sent me, you know, texts and tweets about how bad Mark Sanchez was, I don't have an example, honestly. I mean, I actually think Sanchez is pretty good analyzing the football part of it, but a lot of you felt like he was so pro-Giant. I'll take your word for it. I rarely hear, you know, I'm looking for the analysis of the play. But it didn't occur to me to think that Mark Sanchez was awful. But I've had two of my very good and astute friends when it comes to football, including my guy Murph, say, I hope you crush Sanchez. He was way too pro-Giant. Trade deadline tomorrow at 4. I just trust them. That's all I'll say. I trust them. I think they need more defensively, but, you know, it's got to be the right fit, scheme-wise, culture-wise, compensation-wise, you know, no, you know, rentals. Yeah, they are an NFC championship contender. I'd put Detroit certainly at the top of that list. Detroit right now is really a good football team, but Washington's going to be potentially in the hunt, you know, game at a time, but for a top seed here, 1 or 2 seed, and they're going to have a chance to play in an NFL. You know, they're going to have a chance to win a couple playoff games. You know, when you're that good at that position, quarterback, you can win a lot of games, including games when you're flawed in certain areas. Denton, what were your big takeaways from the game?
Well, I mean, I love how Jaden played. You know, I was really – one of the things I was worried about is when we got the news – that Brian Robinson wasn't going to be playing. The last time he didn't play was against Baltimore, and it felt like they kind of went away from the running game. So I was really nervous about how they were going to handle that, because you look at the Giants' defense, and the Giants' defense versus Baltimore's defense when it comes to running the ball, two very different defenses. Baltimore is very good at stopping it. The Giants are not. So the fact that they didn't shy away from it, I was really pleased with. I thought Chris Rodriguez stepping up after not knowing he was going to play until like 90 minutes before the game time was really great to see. He was the darling, it felt like, of last year's offseason in training camp, so to see him play well was really great. I thought Jaden also played really well. I mean, you've kind of touched on it from all angles. He's really freaking good. Like, really, really freaking good. And I love that Noah Brown was getting involved early. You know, I like that they're spreading the ball around a little bit. Obviously, I want to see Terry do well. And you had talked about whether or not he's a Pro Bowl wide receiver. Right now, he's 7th in receiving yards with 598 and tied for second in touchdowns with six.
In the NFC or the league?
In the league. And his career high, just on a personal note, in touchdowns for a season was his rookie year 2019 where he had seven. So he's playing the best football of his career with Jaden Daniels. So that's wonderful to see. And then Dante Fowler's awesome. I mean, he's really become a good pass rusher for this team. He has 6.5 sacks. He's on pace to go for double digits the first time since Kerrigan that a guy's gone. Or I guess Daron Payne.
What's the most Fowler's ever had in a season?
Let me look that up now. Because I guess Daron Payne had, what, 11 that year where he got the contract? But the first edge guy since Kerrigan to go over double digits, because Sweat never did, and Lord knows Chase Young never did. He had 11.5 in 2019 with the Rams.
With the Rams.
And then the second closest was 8 in 17 with Jacksonville. And then the 6.5 is the third most of his career through 9 games. So he's really playing good, good football on the defensive side.
In the NFC right now, I think your starting receivers would be Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb. Yes or no?
Yeah, it would be CeeDee because you just go by numbers for the Pro Bowl.
But I think Terry would make the Pro Bowl team right now because the only other NFC receiver in front of him in yards, Jaden Reed, Green Bay. Now, there are some that are very close. You know, Darnell Mooney's having a really good year. Smith Najigba's actually having a really good season. And we both love neighbors, but they're just not productive enough offensively for him to get there.
But the winning also matters.
How is Amon-Ra St. Brown not going to be a first-team NFC Pro Bowler?
He eventually will. Like, that'll balance out. He's going to have a good game. But, like, Terry being able to play as the season progresses in more nationally televised games is certainly going to help. Everybody knows about Terry across the league, and they know that he's suffered for the first 6 years of his career because of the quarterback situation. But getting to see him in primetime with Jaden, I think, will boost his chances for a Pro Bowl spot.
How many Pro Bowls? Has Terry made one Pro Bowl?
I think he's made at least one. I don't know that he's made two, but I think
one
he's
Pro
made
Bowl.
At least one.
He made one Pro Bowl. Was it as an alternate? Yeah, he made a Pro Bowl in 2022. 2022, he made a Pro Bowl. I forget if that was a starting Pro Bowl. Well, you don't get counted as a Pro Bowl if you're an alternate, right? You play in the game, but you're not. That doesn't go on your resume.
No, it definitely does. It definitely
does. Oh, it does?
Yeah, it does.
Well, look up 2022. I'm curious as to whether or not he was voted as a starter or as a backup or as an alternate. I'm curious. All right. Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Window Nation is going to help you out before winter arrives. Industry experts say heating costs are going up again this winter, as much as 23%, depending on where you live. And if you don't have Window Nation windows, a lot of that money that is heating your home is going right out the window. Window Nation has some of the most insulated windows you can buy. That means more of the heat you're paying for will stay inside your home. Actually, a lot more than the other big-name window brands. Window Nation's proved it to me, and they'll make you a believer as well. The best part is that this November, you can get these amazing windows at 50% off. Plus, you can save even more with 0% interest for 5 full years. Get top-tier windows from Window Nation at a fraction of the cost of other big names. Hurry, the sale ends November 30th, so act now before this offer ends. Schedule a fast in-home estimate right now at 866-90-NATION.
I'm Jed Lipinski, and Gone South Season 4 will be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Or visit windownation.com.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.